All right, what are you guys getting ready to film?
We are going to do a Visual Studio Toolbox episode. I'm one of the co-hosts of Visual Studio Toolbox, a show that Robert Green started, and myself and Donovan Brown are now co-hosting episodes, and I have my guest here, Jeremy.
Yeah, I just randomly wandered into the studio. I'm actually a cloud developer advocate and have been doing a ton of things with Azure Functions. We're going to talk about serverless today, both compute with functions, and then we're going to do another episode that focuses on Cosmos DB, which is the less server version of the database, if you will.
Less server version of the database. I like that.
That's I always say flip it backwards. What's cloud developer advocate? I advocate for developers in the cloud. Serverless is less server. It's not no server.
Yeah, and in my full-time job, I'm actually the product manager for Visual Studio Team Services, which is our DevOps cloud offering. So I have a lot invested in Azure, and me and this guy did an episode pretty recently on .NET as well. So it's cool to have Jeremy in the show. We'll do a lot more stuff together, I'm sure. All right, well, we're ready to get started and talk about Azure Functions. So, Jeremy, why don't you kick it off? Tell us, what are we going to talk about today in detail?
Yeah, so one of the best ways to get familiar with the technology, I think, is to dog food it, right?
Definitely.
And I wanted to talk about a project that I made that's my own URL link shortener. So you're familiar with these. We have aka.ms for example.
Who isn't nowadays?
Exactly. And what I wanted to do was take ownership over the data. So I'm very interested in when do people click through links, what links generate the most click-throughs, right? Is it Twitter? Is it LinkedIn? Is it Facebook? Is it one of these social media sites?
Yeah.
And then I wanted to also look at different statistics, like what time of day is the most popular time of day for people to click or day of the week. So I thought, what better way to leverage functions and serverless than to build a link shortening tool?
Awesome. So why don't we just roll it back just a little bit, because I think sometimes people might be watching the video and they're like, wait, what are you talking about? What is this functions thing? So at like a 5 words or less summary, what is functions? And you know, we are talking about something on Azure, so it's a cloud-hosted thing, but what does functions give to a developer?
Well, if you're going to restrict me to 5 words, I would say events and code, is functions.
Yeah.
But the idea, when we talk about serverless, I like to flip it backwards and say it's less server.
Yes.
So it's the ultimate realization of focusing on your code and not having to worry about necessarily how your code's hosted. It's not even platform as a service, because we're not necessarily talking about web applications.
Right.
We're talking about some sort of event that triggers the code, and then we're talking about the code that actually runs.
Right, and that code could not be X or Y, right? It's all dependent on what you do in the implementation. It's not specific. The code doesn't care what you do with it. You can write to a script file or something. It could generate some data. It could execute a web service call. It could return something to an end user, but really it's agnostic. It doesn't care what code's inside of it. I think that's something that even I took a while to overcome as a train of thought, right? That this is, like you said, a function in the cloud.
Right. I mean, it feels to me like the ultimate realization of the dream that's microservices, if you will. I hate to use an overloaded term.
It's a valid term in this case.
So. I mean, so some of the things that are really neat about functions are, number one, you can write them in different languages.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to demonstrate it in .NET through Visual Studio, but you can do them in Python, PHP, Node.js. You can even write Bash shell scripts that launch functions. So that's one neat thing. The other cool part about the way Azure implements functions is we have a concept of triggers and bindings.
Mm-hmm.
And these are ways we set up the environment to allow us to interact with things like storage and queues, and it can be file storage, it could be blob storage, and it makes it really easy for the developer to work with those resources. And I'm going to show that in the application that I built.
All right, well, that's awesome. Well, let's jump into it. It sounds like a great demo.
All right, so what I'm going to do is jump into the portal right now. So I've already deployed this application. I'm going to take a step back and show how this is built.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to set the stage with the link shortener that I have. I wrote a web front end, but just to focus on the function side, it's a small window, but you can test functions directly from within inside the UI, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
So what I've loaded up here is a link that, if I just paste this link in a new tab, you can see it goes to some of the Azure Functions documentation.
Mm-hmm.
So if I run this through the tester, I'm just going to click run here. It will go out and call that function, and I see a little completed success. And I get some text back that has what is the short URL that I can use for tracking. So I'm just going to copy that and paste that so you can see the way that experience works. So JLIK, which is my first name and part of my last name, .me.
Right.
And then BWE is the short URL. When we hit this, it goes through my function and redirects. Now, for the end user, it's a very simple experience. You just end up where you're going. Mm-hmm. For me, a ton of data is generated from that really simple event.
Right. If and the pass-through collects quite a bit.
Right, it does. And looking at that, I actually wrote the part that shortens the URLs. I wrote that as a script. That's this run script, so you can see my shortener. There's an encoding routine, but the main part of this grabs a request. And obviously, if I have no request, I'm going to return and say, basically, not found. There's nothing there. We get the input. We check the input for null. We go through and basically I'm tagging if it's coming from like Twitter or LinkedIn or some other things. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the day, I'm really just creating a record here that maps the short URL to the long URL, and I'm saving it to table storage. And that's it. So when I'm putting the link in, it's here's the long link, and then give me something short back that I can use.
Yeah.
Now, the real power of this comes from this function host that I have here. And by the way, all of this code is available on GitHub. So I open source this so people can work with this project.
Cool. Yeah, we'll link it in the show notes, definitely.
Right. So the redirect comes in, and this is when you're hitting the short endpoint. So you're hitting the BWE, for mm-hmm. example. So what happens here is it'll grab that short URL, and then I have a keep alive that sort of pings the server, makes sure it's running. Mm-hmm. I also get requests from robots, so I tell them not to follow, right? Because this is my link shortener.
Yeah.
And then we come out and we go in to table storage. Now, this little piece of code here, where you can see the start time and I'm starting a timer, this is something that I love about functions, because when you create the function app, you can check a box and say you want to use Application Insights. Mm-hmm. And this will automatically start building telemetry and analyzing response times and basically giving me the feedback I need to know the health of my application.
Right.
What I wanted to do is, because I'm using table storage, is I wanted to measure how long it takes to read from table storage. So with this telemetry, I have this operation that goes out to the table and finds the long URL. If it gets it back, it says it found it, gets that redirect URL, and it's tracking how long that operation took.
Cool. And this is that's the most sensitive operation. You don't want people to wait when they're being redirected. That happens all the time nowadays with public link shorteners. You get the same URL and
it takes a long time. And then it's whining.
It's horrible.
Exactly. So I wanted to test that, and I wanted to just highlight how easy this was to put this custom data in. I literally am tracking table storage. That's the thing I'm tracking. Mm-hmm. Retrieve is the action I'm taking. And then I'm just passing it how much time elapsed.
Are the first two like strings, or do they have any bigger significance, or they're just the way you decided to store
the
data?
They're just the way I decide to categorize the data with Application Insights.
Got it.
And then it's as simple as two steps. One is I want to do some more operations with this data, but I don't want to slow down the redirect. So I'm going to add some information to a queue that I can pick up and process later.
Cool.
Right now, the event is an HTTP trigger. It came in and requested an endpoint. I throw this on the queue, and then I redirect them. That's it. That's the redirect code. Then I have, we'll ignore keep alive for now, I have this process queue. So again, we said that serverless functions were events and code.
Right.
In this case, the event is there's an item in the queue, and my code pulls that off and does some additional processing. So I'm breaking apart the message in this code, and I'm writing some custom information. One of these is what I call a custom event, which is literally this came in from Twitter or this came in from LinkedIn.
The source, yeah.
Right? And then the other thing, so you can see I do the track event here. The other thing I'm doing, and that's actually adding a document. I'll get to that in a minute. There is a page view. So with this piece of code, I'm highlighting a page view. So now I know which page it actually went out to. So I'm seeing what was the medium, what was the page.
Right.
And I'm adding that all through Application Insights, and I want to show what that looks like. And then this is a piece that we can probably dive into at another time, because this is creating a document for Cosmos DB. And I added this on later. I started just tracking through Application Insights, but then I decided to create a Cosmos DB database because then I can stand up a Power BI dashboard and do some exciting things around that.
That's cool. And so what is a Cosmos DB database for those that don't know?
Yeah, it's the actually the function is serverless compute. The Cosmos DB is serverless database. It's a not only SQL, right? NoSQL document-based database that's hosted in the cloud. What's really neat about Cosmos DB is that you can pick your interface. Mm-hmm. We have a Document DB interface that was developed for the previous incarnation, Document DB.
Yeah. Well, it was called Document DB when it first came out on Azure.
Right.
It was, you know, very comparable to Mongo. That's how people often talked about it at Microsoft entering the NoSQL space. And then more recently, we renamed it to Cosmos. So if there's any confusion out there, that's sorry. Microsoft loves to rebrand. But the product's been very solid, very, you know, long development cycle already for it, and quite... you know, the cloud scale player, I think, is what they often call it, right? This database lives in a ton of data centers as a concept, and you as a developer have powerful flexibility to deploy your data across the world.
Well, you do. You get to choose your consistency levels, and you get to just click with replication, which is pretty powerful.
Awesome,
And the other thing I'll point out is this is using the DocumentDB interface. And the reason why I call that out is because you can use SQL syntax to query with DocumentDB. Mm-hmm. However, there are a ton of developers that are used to MongoDB, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And you can use a MongoDB interface and write an application around Mongo. So it's very flexible in that respect.
Yeah, it's very cool that you have these options. And, you know, I'm a SQL developer most of my life, and I've been toying with NoSQL. I kind of like it. And it's awesome to see this not really stop me, because I actually started with Mongo as my first database that I learned. You know, just the basics around that. Not claiming I'm a developer yet on that space, but having SQL, I didn't realize we even added that, so that's awesome. I'm learning something new in each episode here.
And that's what I'm finding out with Cosmos DB. It's so easy. I'm a SQL developer myself. I worked with it for 15 years.
Yeah.
So I had that mindset transition to a document DB. But after standing up actual applications using this for my analytics, I'm finding out that it's not only easy to work with, but it is scalable and fast, which is everything someone wants, and I don't have to hire a DB. It's literally inexpensive. I run this shortener on my own subscription through Azure, and one of the huge benefits I see from Azure Functions is I only pay when someone clicks through the function.
Yeah.
Right? And with the model, I get a million calls per month right now. I'm sure it may change at some point. But with that, it's literally pennies for me a month. I think last month it was a quarter for the storage and the function calls.
It's so cheap.
To handle, and it's 2,000 requests a day.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. The thing about, you know, all of this technology on top of Azure is that you are living in the cloud, that your credit card is plugged in there, yours or your company's or whatever. In the trial, we do give you a limit, so if you want to not go over the free trial limit, we provide it in Azure, but I'm always kind of encouraging developers thinking about moving to the cloud as the first thing. It's like, think about telemetry. So it's awesome to see Application Insights built in. You actually want to know what's going on with your cloud service. It's not just, you know, consuming the resources of your service. It's going to cost you money potentially, depending on how much, you know, requests come in, and people just need to think that way. It's a slightly different world. You know, at the end of the day, money matters. So
it does. And speaking of Application Insights, what I thought I would do is show some of Application Insights just so people can see. And this is just the check mark out of the box when I created the function app and some of that custom code. And I want to show the reports that it gives back. And then we can look at what it looks like to create a function from scratch through Visual Studio.
Let's do it. Yeah, let's take a look.
So let's pop over back to the website. So this is the function app I had running. And I've got all these features that are configured. One of the things I wanted to call attention to is this is using a feature of functions called proxies. And that allows me to map one route to another route. So the function app itself is something like blah, 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 azurewebsites.net/API/URL redirect??
Totally friendly.
Which is not a short URL. So in my proxies, and you can see this in the code, this is part of that code base, I map what is a short URL right here, so just slash and what the code is, to that longer URL. And that allows it to translate behind the scenes, no one sees that happen, and maps it onto that longer function. So I have my custom domain, and then I have the Azure Functions running behind it.
Cool.
If we come into the Application Insights portion, the very first thing that Application Insights pulls up for me, which I love, is the overall health of the system. So we've got this live stream, which I'll show you in a second, But this is really informative to me here because this is giving me an overview of response times over time. And you can see that I'm averaging a few hundred milliseconds, but this is across all of my services. So mm-hmm. it's not necessarily just the redirects.
Right.
You can also see a count of requests. And then up here, we've got something called smart detection. This has actually alerted me several times. When it finds something that's outside of the norm, mm-hmm. it will automatically email me and tell me, you know what, your redirect usually only takes 100 milliseconds. Suddenly it's taking 2 seconds, you should look into it. Yeah. It automatically does
that's
that.
Awesome.
And when I click on it, if there was a smart detection, it also helps me diagnose and shows me the sessions that were slow sessions so I can look into them and try to figure out what's going on. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna scroll down here to performance. And when we see performance, this will let me pick, so overall you can see 122 milliseconds. What's really important to me is the redirect experience, right? That's what the end user is experiencing. So we've got a 94 millisecond average. And if I want to drill into more detail, I can come up here. And over in this graph, I've got my percentiles. So I can see what the 99th percentile looks like. And you can see the majority falls even faster than that.
Yeah.
So, and this is the least expensive version of functions. You can back it with beefier servers. But even with minimal resources, it's still giving me this type of performance. The other piece is because I tracked that custom application insights telemetry, mm-hmm. if I click on dependencies, you're going to see my Azure table storage operation.
Right.
And you can see the average there is 17 milliseconds, which is more than fast enough for my needs and what I'm doing here.
Yeah, it's cool. The fact that you can drill down all the way from like what the requests are doing overall to the custom tracking that you did within a particular block of code. I think that's super powerful. And the fact that it alerts you is even more awesome. I've used Application Insights kind of since the beginning. I've implemented it in some products, so I do have dashboards, but I haven't implemented it recently, and it's cool to see. I didn't even know they added that new automatic notification capability.
It's pretty cool. The other thing that I call this the sad portion of the application, because it is sad to think that you might be sitting in a hotel room watching the live stream of your website saying, is someone clicking it? Is someone clicking it?
It's amusing. It has its own level of amusement. Listen, when you when you sort of create something, this is one of your babies now, you know,
right.
for better or worse. It's fun to watch.
So this is a live set of requests. And as the requests come in, it's going to show me those. And I may actually force the issue over here. But let's go ahead and do a redirect. And I'm just going to the generic Azure Docs. So that's the short code to land on the Azure documentation. You can see it hit here. It showed me the request. It showed me how long it took. And then I have all my trace information on the side. So if I want to drill into details, I'm not going to click on this now because it'll go into IP addresses and MAC and like everything you wanted to know about
right.
the session.
It'll
but you can drill into the detail. The other piece with App Insights, and again, this is just out of the box without me adding anything, is this nice little tab right here for analytics. Mm-hmm. If I click on this, it's going to drop me into basically everything that it stores is queryable for insights. So I can set up pie graphs and charts. I'm going to just open up my folder here and look at mediums over the past 24 hours and run that. And this will give me a pie chart that breaks down Twitter clicks, LinkedIn clicks, blog clicks, et cetera. So you can see Twitter is definitely my main medium of choice for generating links.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember somebody showed me this at Ignite, actually. This is like a SQLite language, right?
I
forget what they call the language itself, but to me, when I saw it the first time, I was like, oh, this is a SQL. Close enough, I guess. It allows you to query all the various parameters. And this is, again, this is the back end of Application Insights data that's been collected. It's not any other kind of data. But it can, I think, be mixed with other kind of data sources to give you a more holistic view of your environment if you had a complex deployment. At least that's how the person described it to me in the demo.
Right, yeah. No, yeah. It can, and it's all promptable. If I'm inside and I start to type, it's right. giving me an IntelliSense. So it'll walk you through creating these queries. And
cool.
that's exactly how I built the one you just saw. And I'm going to open top page views, and we'll just do this top.
So these were all ones you built yourself, right?
They
didn't have those by default, okay.
And it saved it for me, and then I just drop into table, and I can see channel 9 is actually one of the more popular links in the past
right.
24 hours,
cool.
right? So that's always nice to pull up on the fly. We've got Azure. This is actually interesting. These are all Microsoft properties. I actually do tweet other links, but these are the popular ones for 24 hours.
Yeah, that's cool.
So that's the Application Insights experience. Let's pop over to Visual Studio and just show someone what it looks like to start a new function app from
within
Visual Studio.
Yeah, that'd be really
Studio.
Great. I think it's awesome when we show how we did something and we provide the code, but often we forget this part.
Right, so exactly. How do you get started?
Yeah.
So the prerequisite here is that I'm working with at least 15.3, right? So it's a preview version of Visual Studio 2017.
Right.
I think we're up to 15.5. Any of those versions will work for functions?
Yeah, if anybody has been kind of away from the Visual Studio versioning game for a while, that's the versioning scheme we've gone to. And if you like click go into About Dialog for a second under the Help menu,
sure.
Yeah, you'll be able to show. So if anybody has any doubt which version they're on, you can jump in there. And there's 15.4 preview 2 of that particular preview branch. And you can install it side by side. So I have always the RTM version and the preview on my machine. It tends to work really well. I've never had any issues. Asterisk. Devil's in the details. Be careful.
Now you've said it.
I care about your machine and your environment users out there. But yeah, that's how people know in case they don't know which version they have.
Yeah. So once you have that install and you have to pick the cloud workload, we'll go into a new project and Azure Functions lights up. And the way I like to talk about this, we talked about events and code. The function is the actual piece of code that gets executed. The function app is the host for those different events and pieces of code.
Right.
So you have a host. That's what this Azure Functions is.
It's the minimal amount of stuff around it to make it work as a function, and the rest is up to you.
Right. So what this will do is it'll create an empty project for me that's just ready to host an endpoint. Mm-hmm. So then I can click on that and add a new item. And fortunately, these are sorted alphabetically, so Azure Function comes up right on top.
Nice.
Yeah. And that's convenient. And I'm just going to give this a name of echo name and click add. And what will happen is it's going to create a class for me. The entire experience for functions within Visual Studio is attribute driven. So it's very easy to add what we call bindings or connections to things like table storage and queues. What I'm going to do is create an HTTP trigger. This says basically, you know what, call this piece of code in response to an HTTP request, which is a pretty common scenario. And I'm making it anonymous so anyone can test it out and access it. But
We support permissioning, but for our example here.
Right.
No big deal. And I think it'd be also good just to kind of glance at, if we go under dependencies, like what NuGet packages is this team bringing in to make this the default? So you just got the function SDK, and that's about it, right? So it's very bare bones at this point. There's no application insights. There's no, there's no gunk. If you don't need that stuff, it's not by default for you.
Right. And then if you want to start tracking custom telemetry, you would just add a NuGet package, go into the Explorer, and add that experience.
Yeah, I think if you right-click on dependencies, it would give you that.
Yep.
Yep, add
NuGet. Add reference. Yep. So what we've got is our async task, and what's coming out of this is a response message because we have to respond to the request. What's going into it is a trigger. There's two types of parameters we're typically going to pass. A trigger is what actually causes it to get called, and then a binding is something we might interact with, and I'm going to show how to do a binding in a second.
Cool.
So we've got this anonymous. It supports get and post. The route's null. Here's the request, and here's the log. And by default, it creates some code that expects you to put the name in the request body or in a query string, and it's going to echo it back.
Right.
But what I want to show is before we even touch Azure, I've downloaded the prerequisites, I've created a function app, I can put a breakpoint right here and press debug. And what will happen is it's going to run a full version of the function host right on my laptop.
Right.
And we just announced that we have this experience available cross-platform.
Cool.
So it's not just Windows machines. This will run on Linux as well and Mac OS.
Nice.
So it's a cross.
I've been waiting for that one. I kept hearing it was coming, and it's awesome that we finally announced that. I missed that part. Not that I'm a Linux person or anything. I still run a PC, so I'm quite biased. But
right. I spend a lot of time. I actually was having fun running the function host in my Ubuntu on Windows 10 through the Windows subsystem for Linux.
That's cool. I should try that.
Accessing it. Yeah. So all I'm doing is pasting the URL it gave me, and you can see we hit the breakpoint. And if I continue for that, it's going to slap my wrist and tell me that I needed to pass a name. So we'll go ahead and give that a name. Name equals VS Toolbox. Hey, we'll brand
it. There you go.
And we hit our breakpoint again, and we'll go ahead and continue through that. And what we'll see is it'll echo back and say, hello, VS Toolbox.
Nice.
So that's a great start. We've got it running locally. We were able to debug it. Let's take it one step further and load it into Azure. Mm-hmm. What I'm going to do is just right-click and go into Publish. And the Publish experience will allow me to create a function app in the portal and connect to an existing one, or I can spin up a completely new application.
Right.
From right here. So we're going to
I loved your slip there earlier, the publish experiment. I mean, sometimes the world can be a publish experiment.
Did I say experiment?
Yeah. We're going to try for the publish experience today. Let's see if we get that.
So we're going to call this My VS Toolbox App, use my subscription. And I'm going to give it a second to spin, because what's validating is making sure that is indeed a unique application name.
Yeah.
I'll
it's
give
actually
it a new
creating the cloud resource. It's assigning it to the resource group of your choice or a new one. So there's a lot to do there, but you never have to leave the ID in this case.
Right. Cool. I'm going to pick a location. We'll do West U.S. since we're filming here in
Redmond.
What's
the biggest machine can we do here?
Oh, my goodness. You would want to do this, right?
Okay,
so one thing I do want to call out, I can pick these various cores to back my experience. Mm-hmm. I can also pick the consumption plan. The consumption plan is what I call the easy button for functions. I don't have much control over size of the servers, but I'm allowing Azure to do all the scaling for me. Mm-hmm. It will automatically look at incoming requests and do what it feels it needs to do to accommodate those.
Awesome.
There's always trade-offs, right? If you have dedicated machines, you can configure them to be always on, so they're ready to start, where right. with the consumption plan, it may go to sleep and you have a new request and it takes a little bit longer to start up. But again, you have flexibility of options for
and
that.
And I think consumption, there's a reason to go with it price-wise, right? There's some differential
right.
there that's a good deal if that's good enough for your production environment.
Right, and that's what I'm using for my redirect experience as well. I cheat a little bit with a keep alive that mm-hmm. pings the server to keep it awake.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's valid. They know you're consuming it. Nobody feels cheated in Azure, team, I'm sure.
Right, yeah, no. They're
keeping an eye on you, but for good reason. They need to scale
for
your
good
service.
Reason. That's right.
Yeah.
So this is going to deploy, and there's really, I like to share when people are watching this spin, there's two steps to this. The first step is creating the assets to host the application. Mm-hmm. So it's going to create a resource group, which if someone's not familiar with Azure, that is a logical group of related assets.
Yeah.
I think of it as lifecycle. If something's going to be created or destroyed with something else, so you have an app and a database, if they're related, mm-hmm. they probably belong in the same resource group. And you can track cost by resource group, and you can script out and even delete entire resource groups.
Yeah, it's a very powerful idea. At first, I was, when resource groups were introduced, I was a bit frustrated. It's like another thing to do. But then I was like,
right.
oh, wait, there's a lot of benefits to this other thing to do. So now I don't even think about it twice. I'm starting to memorize resource groups. I'm getting that bad. I'm like, okay,
right.
this is my miscellaneous one. If I need to just throw something up versus, okay, this is a bunch of real stuff together, then I group them.
Right, and it's great, too, if you're giving demos or meetups or user groups, because you can create a resource group per that experience and go through the same demo but partition it off.
Yeah.
So once it spins up those assets, it's got the host, it's got the function app has storage with it. Mm-hmm. Next thing it does is builds and creates a set of assets that it then bundles up and deploys out. So the first step is, what is my target? And then the second step is publishing, and now it says publish succeeded. So what we'll do is we'll just copy this endpoint right here. I click copy to clipboard, and we'll paste it in. And notice now instead of running off localhost, I'm doing the full My VS Toolbox app
Azure
website.
There's the name
websites.
You selected. That was the unique name.
Yep, and we called it Echo Name, I believe. So if we hit that, it's going to spin up, and it should slap me on the wrist again and tell me that it's expecting me to put a name inside the query string. And what we're seeing right now is that spin up, for the first time. And we'll let that go. And I always encourage people to use the mouse trick, right? If it's a clockwise mouse rotation, should speed things up for us.
That is definitely the magic.
Right there.
We need all Jeremy's magic tricks.
And look at that. So please pass a name or query string. Now that it's spun up, mm-hmm. if I correct this and we'll do this again, name equals VS Toolbox, boom, immediately it comes back, hello, VS Toolbox.
Cool.
And that's the experience. So basically, I showed you how to create the function app from scratch from Visual Studio, But then if you want to see what a mature application looks like, something I'm using in the real world, right, then that's going to be on the GitHub site for the link shortener that I created.
Yeah, and the fact that you can write this thing in many languages, the fact that it's all cloud globally hostable, I mean, it's amazing what you can do nowadays.
It is.
Yeah, the only thing I don't have in production for more recent stuff is probably functions. I probably should find some excuse to put a function up there, but it's cool.
Yeah, it's a great experience, and it's something that I'll be looking at too, is how do we take existing web applications and migrate them where it makes sense. Just because you can move them doesn't mean you have to, but where it makes sense. Because ultimately what happens is, instead of one app with five endpoints, that if you make one update, you have to redeploy the entire thing.
App, yeah.
With the function, you can literally just test and redeploy that one endpoint in isolation. And you know, you are very familiar with DevOps and that experience, and being able to continuously deploy at a microservice level is a huge benefit in my book.
Yeah, it's super awesome. And the fact you can monitor it, you can really get a sense of, do you need to roll something back? How is it doing? Or if there's any underlying performance issues in your infrastructure, like the table storage slowdown, whatever. I mean, you have lots of flexibility nowadays to understand what is going on with my production environment and my staging environment. If you put everything up in Azure, you have all that same telemetry for all your environments, which is really awesome. I've always loved that part of it. I mean, the dev experience is awesome, right, to get you going, but get it up in the cloud, you get a lot more sort of benefit.
Absolutely. I'm digging it. I'm a one-man shop, right, with
my
shortening tool, but I get all the telemetry and information I need to make sure it's running and up and healthy.
Awesome. Well, is that all you wanted to demo for this particular
topic?
All right. Well, thank you for being on Visual Studio Toolbox, and we hope you folks enjoyed the episode. We'll make sure we'll put the links to the GitHub repo and to any other resources we mentioned in the show notes, and we hope you come back again and watch another episode of Visual Studio Toolbox. So thank you, Jeremy, for being on, and see you folks later.
Thank you. See you.